Well, this morning we are continuing in our series of trusting God in difficult times. And this morning I want to start by asking you a question. And it's not a question I expect out loud answers to, but it's a question I want you to ponder in your mind and in your heart. And the question is simply this: have you ever had a time in your life where day after day, month after month, or year after year, you've longed for something? I'm talking about day after day, or month after month, or year after year, you have longed for something, you've prayed for something, you just have this deep desire for God to come through. Maybe it's some kind of difficult circumstance and you want God to intervene. Maybe it's something you really want in your life, you desperately want to happen. I don't know what it is, but I'm betting you do if you've ever experienced this. I do know, however, what it was one of the times that it was like this for me. And some of you guys have briefly heard me share different elements of this story now and again, but for me, a time when I deeply wanted something month after month and day after day and close to a year was when we were going through our whole international adoption in Kenya. And every month, there would come up this time when the adoption council was supposed to be meeting together. And we would pray deeply that God would move the adoption council to grant us the adoption of this little Kenyan boy. So we would pray and we'd pray. And as the months went on, and as the amount of time left on our visa started to dwindle, the prayer became more and more desperate. The prayer became more and more desperate, and the prayer started including sometimes even tears, and there was just like this deep longing. It went from the beginning when we first started to like this really, really hopeful, really, really like, oh yeah, confident, oh yeah, God will come through, to this desperate, please God, if you don't do anything, we have no hope. Like, if you don't intervene here, there's nothing we can do. We've done everything we can do. You need to intervene. And the prayer was sometimes so desperate, sometimes, like I said, even with tears and just this crying out to God with all our hearts that God would intervene. And so this week, as I prepared to teach on the story of Hannah, it was really moving for me because Hannah has this same experience, this deep longing for something that she would pray for, that she would ask God for over and over, pouring out her heart before God. And so this morning, let's jump into the story. Let's hear and see how Hannah did this, how Hannah poured out her heart before God, how Hannah dealt with this very, very difficult circumstance. And I hope that it will bless you, and I hope that it will speak into your own life, especially if you are currently walking through something like this. So the story is found in 1 Samuel chapter 1, and I'll give you a little bit of background before we actually start reading some of the text. So Hannah is the wife of a man named Elkanah, and in those days, if you married someone and they could not give you a child, it was quite common then to marry a second wife that then you could get a child with so that your name could continue on. And so the passage doesn't actually say, it does list them, that Hannah first and then Peninnah second, but it doesn't actually say which one was the first or second, but it's very, very likely, given the cultural context, that Hannah was the first wife and that Peninnah was added as a wife to give a child to Elkanah. And so we find then that Hannah is barren. She can't have a child. And year after year, she keeps asking for God to give her this child, but she doesn't have a child. And you have to understand the cultural context there. To not have a child, people would start, you know, whispering behind your back, like, oh, do you know Hannah still hasn't had a child? oh yeah, she must have done something horrible that God must be judging her for. Like, that was the kind of thing that would happen. Like, if you couldn't have a child, everybody assumed that it was because you had somehow screwed up big time in your life, and God was now punishing you for that. So there's all this pain because not only does she have this desperate desire for a child, to have a child, but then there's all these little whisperings going on around her that just makes the pain and the anguish of not having a child even deeper. And it's with that background that we go into the text, 1 Samuel chapter 1, and starting in verse 3. And the verse starts off, it's talking about Elkanah, her husband. And it says this: year after year, this man went up from his town to worship and sacrifice to the Lord Almighty at Shiloh, where Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, were priests of the Lord. And whenever the day came for Elkanah to sacrifice, he would give portions of meat to his wife Peninnah and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah, he gave a double portion, because he loved her, and the Lord had closed her womb. Because the Lord had closed Hannah's womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. This went on year after year, and whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her until she wept and would not eat. Her husband Elkanah would say to her, "Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons?" So not only is she facing this difficult circumstance, but she has the other wife in the situation mocking her and irritating her and provoking her until she breaks down in tears. And then her husband, bless his heart, he means well, I'm sure, but he says, "Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons?" You know, because there's nothing like when you're hurting than somebody making it about them. You know? There's nothing more irritating than that, that when you're deeply hurting, somebody in trying to comfort you actually makes it about them, thus making your pain seem irrelevant. But here's the interesting thing. Hannah, as we're going to see, doesn't respond in saying and get angry at them. The text doesn't record any kind of outlash that Hannah has towards either of these people. And so it begs the question of, when you are going through difficult times, how do you respond to difficult people? Because inevitably, when we're going through a hard time, we always end up having to face difficult people. I remember when we were walking through the adoption process, there'd be some people that'd be like, "Well, why don't you just give up and come back home?" "Oh, thank you. That's very encouraging." You know, or other people would mean well, and they'd be like, "Well, we're sure that it must be the Lord's will. How come it's not working out for you? It must work out." Even after we got back, people would say this to us, even after the adoption had failed. And you're like, you know, that's not really helpful, because, yeah, we thought it was God's will too, but here we are. You know, people sometimes well-meaning people are insensitive. And sometimes people like to kick us when we're down. They do. This perfect opportunity for me to just pile it on. And we are going to face difficult people. So how do we respond, not only when we face difficult circumstances in our lives, but then when difficult people present themselves while we're walking through this difficult time? How do we deal with those difficult people? That's not easy. It's not easy. But let's have a look at what Hannah does, how Hannah responds to the situation. This is what we see Hannah doing. That is, if my clicker starts working. There we go. All right. "Once when they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now Eli, the priest, was sitting on his chair by the doorpost of the Lord's house. And in her deep anguish, Hannah prayed to the Lord, weeping bitterly." So Hannah doesn't respond to either of these two difficult people. She takes it to God. She takes it to God. She takes it to God, and not only does she take it to God, she doesn't come to God and say, you know, God, I've really been wanting this for a while, so, you know, if you're not too busy, if it's your will, if you kind of feel like it, could you maybe, work out this whole not having a kid thing? No, she comes to God and she's really real with God. She's really vulnerable with God. She pours out her heart. It says she prayed to the Lord weeping bitterly. She poured out her heart. She was really real and raw and vulnerable with God. And it says, and she made a vow saying, Lord Almighty, if you only look on your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant. How many of us, when we've been going through a difficult time, have ever felt like God's forgotten us? Like God's forgotten us. That's how I felt. I was like, where are you, God? We're praying. We're praying month after month, and you are not coming through the way we're asking you. You are not showing up the way we thought you would. Why have you forgotten us? And you begin to wonder, have I done something? Like you begin to wonder what's going on. You feel like God's forgotten you. And it's a very lonely place when you're in that place, when you feel like the people who are supposed to be supporting you are difficult. And this God that you desire to show up for you, he feels so distant. And you feel so forgotten by him. So alone. It's a lonely place when you're in that. And so she says, remember me, your servant, and give her a son. Then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head. She says, look, God, if you give me a son, I'll give him back to you. Just please, please, I've been asking for this for so long. Just please, would you show up and do this for me? As she kept on praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth, and Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Now, speaking of difficult people, Eli thought she was drunk and said to her, how long are you going to stay drunk? Put away your wine. Not so, my Lord, Hannah replied. I am a woman who is deeply troubled. I have not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of my great anguish and grief. Now, to be fair to Eli, it wasn't uncommon during the feast time for people to, have a little bit too much to drink. But this is his first response. So now she's faced with another difficult person. She says, no, this is what I'm doing. I am pouring out my heart before God. This is what I'm doing. And Eli goes on to say, well, be blessed. I hope God grants you what you've given. But the question I want to ask is, when you are in difficult times, do you pour out your heart to God like Hannah did? Is that where you go to? Because God is there. Even when we feel like he's distant, even when we feel like he's forgotten us, he's there. And do we pour out our heart? Do we go to him in those difficult times? And are we real and honest with him the way that Hannah is? I mean, she calls him Lord, which is very much this intimate language of knowing God deeply. And the priest, Eli, he actually just calls him by a distant name, the God of Israel. But Hannah, she calls him her Lord. There's this intimate kind of relationship that she has, and she knows that she can go to God and pour out her heart before him, even though he feels so far away, even though she feels forgotten. She knows somehow that he's there. And so she goes to him. So I really, really would encourage you, when you're in these times, it's not easy, I know, I get that, I've been there. It's not easy, but I encourage you, pour out your heart to God, and I really believe that he will minister to you by his Holy Spirit. I don't know what it will look like. I don't know if you'll get what you're longing for Some people do, some people don't. And I don't know why some people do and some people don't. But I encourage you to pour out your heart like Hannah did. Now, the amazing thing is that Hannah, after she goes away from pouring out her heart to God and asking him for this, she goes home, and sure enough, she ends up getting pregnant with a child. And she ends up having this son. And she says she ends up taking care of him for 3 years, and now the time has come when Hannah is going to fulfill her vow of giving him back to God. And so this is where we're going to pick up the story in verse 24. It says, after he was weaned, she took the boy with her, young as he was, along with a three-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord at Shiloh. Now, it's easy to just read through this and be like, oh, okay, yeah, she took the son, she brought an offering. But if you understand what the required offering was for fulfilling a vow, it's actually only a third of what she brought. So God gives her the desire of her heart, and Hannah responds in this amazing gratitude. She's generous. She actually brings an offering to God that is three times more than what is required. Three times. She's so grateful that God has heard her that she actually brings three times more. And so another question that could easily be asked of us then is when God does give us the desires of our heart, how do we respond? Do we respond in gratitude like this? Like, what an amazing response. And so, like, that is amazing to me that she gave triple what was required of her. And when the bull had been sacrificed, they brought the boy to Eli, and she said to him, pardon me, my lord, as surely as you live, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord, and I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life he will be given over to the Lord. And he worshipped the Lord there. Now, another question for you. When God finally gave Hannah the desires of her heart, she held that desire that she'd been given with open hands, and she gave it back to the Lord. Sometimes when we finally get what we want in life, we do more like this. It's mine, nobody better touch it, nobody better mess with it, it's mine, leave me alone, I finally got what I wanted. Hannah doesn't respond like that. Hannah holds what she's been given with open hands and says, God, what you've blessed me with, I give back to you. I give it to you, to serve you, to further your mission. I think that's incredible. And I hope that as I continue to walk through life and I have different desires and longings of my heart that I ask for God, my prayer for myself is that when I receive those longings of my heart, that I hold them with his open hand like Hannah did. Because that's difficult to do, especially when you've wanted something so bad for so long. When you finally get it, it's hard to just be willing to give it right back to God and to trust him with that. What amazing trust Hannah has in God. Now, if this was all there was to the story of Hannah, and this was the end, there's so many lessons we can take out of this. But the most incredible part of this whole story to me is not the story that we read just in this text in 1 Samuel chapter 1. The most incredible part to me is this. Samuel, who that son is, goes on to be a great prophet of Israel. He's the one that is there during the transition from the judges, like we heard about last Sunday, to the kings. And he is actually the one that ends up anointing King David, the one who Jesus comes through the line of. And so it's promised to David that his son will reign on the throne forever and will rule the world. And sure enough, Jesus, the Son of God, comes through that line and comes and dies on the cross and rises again to defeat sin and death and to give us a right relationship with God if we choose to accept him and ask for his forgiveness. The redemption of the world Hannah's story is a part of that. The redemption of the world, Hannah plays a significant role in that. Her son, who she prayed for and longed for and suffered through to get, plays a role in that. And the amazing part to me then is simply this. God sees a bigger picture than we do. God sees a bigger picture than we do. We only see our circumstances and how difficult they are. But God sees something bigger, and God throughout history has taken broken situations and used them to do amazing things. And that doesn't, I'm not making light of it. That doesn't make the situation easier. But I think sometimes it's important when we're in the midst of that difficult time to be able to take a step back and think to ourselves, God sees a bigger picture than we do. And God can take a difficult time in our life and use it to accomplish far greater purpose than we could ever imagine. Now, back to the story that I was originally telling about my deep longing. We didn't get the happy ending that Hannah got. We didn't get that happy ending. Our adoption failed. But again, God saw a bigger picture than we did. We went home, back to Campbell River, my first day back at the church that we were serving at, got told that there wasn't going to be a full-time position there for me anymore. You know, as if that wasn't bad enough already. Great news when you get home, right? And we were just so broken, and we just didn't know what to do. We didn't know, like, God, what are you doing? Like, but the amazing thing is, I don't know we would have ever left the island. We loved living on the island. I don't know we would have ever left the island. But God knew we needed to come here. And you know what? This church has been amazing to us since we've come here. We've done a lot of healing being a part of this church. And we love this church. And we love you guys. And God has done amazing things and taken me and my family on amazing adventures, and God has worked in incredible ways. And I know I have grown so much as a person in these last 3 years. And God did incredible things in our time in Africa there too. And Amanda's dad started getting connected with a local church when we were gone, because he came to live in our house when we were gone. All kinds of amazing bigger picture things happen as a result. And so I just want to encourage you. You don't know what bigger picture God has in mind. You don't know. And if I could go back, I would still, there's part of me that would love to make it all work out. But I wouldn't be here giving this message if it did, I don't think. So I want to encourage you, trust God that he has a bigger picture in play, a bigger picture than just whatever suffering, whatever difficult circumstance you're in right now. There's something bigger going on than just our life and what's happening in it. And I just want to close. I want to pray for you guys. But I just really, really sense this morning. I really sense this morning that the Holy Spirit wants to do some healing work in some of our lives this morning. Some of us have come here broken, hurting, facing difficult circumstances. And I've been there, and I know.